Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. A bad idea I'm about to do, True Tales of Seriously Poor Judgment and Stunningly Awkward Adventure, is published by DeCapo Press, written by Chris Gethard, and Chris joins us now to talk about the book. Chris, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
In the book, you share stories about losing your virginity in high school, your dreams of being a pro wrestler, and a detailed description of getting a colonic. What made you want to put these very personal stories in print for any stranger to read?
Well, you know, I've been doing comedy many years, and I have found over time that really the stuff that serves me best is when I'm just as brutally honest as possible. So that's just over sort of many years of training and seeing what people respond to. And for me, it's just I have to own it. I'm kind of a loserish guy. I'm not the coolest person anybody's ever met. So the more I'm able to just own up to that and who I am, and the more honest I can get about it, usually the better I wind up feeling. And then as a byproduct, hopefully people find it funny or amusing on their end as well. But it definitely makes me think pretty hard that these are the stories I've chosen to share with the world.
How did you choose what 18 stories from your life of misadventure to include in the book?
Well, I'd been telling a lot of the stories around the New York comedy scene for years on stage and getting response from them. So all told, I had about 35 stories to choose from, and then it was just a matter of seeing which ones linked together, seeing which ones the publishers liked the best, seeing which ones the publishers said were too inappropriate to include. So it was a matter of sort of, you know, trial by fire, just sort of getting them all into my publisher and then seeing how we wanted to build the book as a whole.
You mentioned performing comedy in New York City, and you hooked up with the Upright Citizens Brigade in New York during college and have been, you know, working there in different capacities, studying and performing since. What has hooking up with UCB meant to you?
It's really been everything. You know, I was a very sort of lost soul in my younger days and kind of a depressed guy, an angry guy. I didn't really feel like I knew my place. And when I found the UCB, I was like, okay, here's a bunch of other weirdos. Here's other creative weirdos who aren't sure where else they can go. And I got there when the theater just came into existence. And it's also been good, too, because it's a, you know, it's a place that I was there in its earliest days when it was very much, you know, there would be 10 people in the audience. And now, every, you know, there's all these people on TV and movies who have come out of there. So it's been pretty inspiring to realize, like, it was a totally homegrown sort of punk rock thing that I got to see grow. So it's outside of sort of providing me with a creative outlet, it's inspiring to have been a part of something where it was like a total do-it-yourself operation, just make it happen. So it's been cool on many levels to be involved at the theater.
Tell us about the origins of the Chris Gethard Show.
The Chris Gethard Show, I had just, you know, I do all the traditional types of comedy, improv and stand-up and sketch, all that stuff, and then I also got a reputation for doing just strange things to see what would happen. I was doing a storytelling show in New York, and there were a lot of people who were really into it, and since I grew up in New Jersey, most of the stories are set there, and they said, you know, we want to see all the places where these stories took place. So we did a show where I rented a bus and took 60 people all around New Jersey and showed them where the stories took place, where I wound up taking 60 people into the basement where I lost my virginity in a house I hadn't been in over 10 years. And pretty surreal. And then that kind of led to the Gethard Show, just because it was sort of an attempt to have an outlet to sort of just house all my strangest ideas. So we did that at the UCB Theater for a couple years, and then last year we switched that over to a public access TV show shot at the Manhattan Neighborhood Network in Manhattan. So now we're a part of the always strange lineage of public access TV history.
And you and some, you know, comedy friends from UCB and presumably other places too, or mostly UCB friends?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of UCB people, and then, you know, that's probably the home base for where a lot of the people come from. But there's also a lot of filmmakers around the city and musicians around the city that we've linked up with, mm-hmm. who have become sort of part of the culture of our show. Pretty much anybody who has a weird side is figuring out that our show can be a venue for them, which feels nice, you know, to give a lot of these outcasts a home.
Sure. And you create sort of show destructive themes, like recent ones include Ruin the Show. You had another Night of Zero Laughs. And last week you did the Blindfold Show, where everybody on the panel, including yourself, invited other people to mess with you while you were blindfolded and couldn't take your blindfolds off for the whole show. Why? Why do you want to make your shows so sort of hard to execute?
Well, on a very basic level, I just think it's funny to have a show named The Chris Gethard Show, which is, you know, named after this guy who's a visibly sort of like nerdy dude, and then even though the show is named after him, he's the one who's least in control. I mean, just on a basic level, that goes against the grain of most talk show type things that are named after a person, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The show's named after a guy, that guy, usually the buck stops with him, but I tend to have the least control over anything, so... Usually, I like to build it, too, in a way where the show is, like, very interactive. We always have people on Twitter contributing to the show while it's happening, and phone calls as well. And I like the idea that, like, some kid from Kansas can call up our show in Manhattan, say, like, oh, you should mess with this guy in this way, and people might actually do it. I think it's cool to make them feel like they have the authority over what happens. So, yeah, like, the blindfold show, I watched that one the next day and didn't even realize that there was a guy dressed as a horse dangling a sausage in front of my face for almost the entire show. Like, to me, that's funny to see the guy who the show is named after having to deal with that.
And being very on edge during it.
Oh, yeah. Most of the topics that I pick for my own show fill me with just pure anxiety, start to finish.
You didn't include in the book your P. Diddy success. And before you tell me why it didn't make it into the publication, explain to the listeners what I'm talking about.
Sure. We did a movement with the Chris Gethard Show. It was on Twitter. It was hashtag Diddy Gethard. The basic premise was, you know, I'm very obsessed with the internet. I like how it connects people. I like how anyone can participate in it. And if you read Diddy's Twitter, it's clearly him doing it. It's not an assistant. It's not some publicist doing his tweets for him. It's just him. And I realized that if we tweeted at him and asked him to do my show, he might actually see it. And a whole bunch of people thought that was a good idea. I put a video up online and just said, you know, wouldn't it be a cool world? Wouldn't it prove that the world is a cool place if I wound up hanging out with Diddy for a night?
Mm-hmm.
And we convinced them to do my show at the UCB Theater, which is a very tiny, grungy theater underneath a supermarket. And it took him, he said he would do it after 6 days. It took him 14 months to actually commit to being, you know, to picking a date, and eventually he did, and it was a really great night. He was very cool, very gracious, and super hilarious, and I think all the people who were there that night felt like they were part of something special, which makes me feel good. And as far as putting it in the book goes, it's, you know, the whole book is based around the idea of, like, I've had a lot of these experiences that were maybe ill-advised or unexpected, and that one is, like, there's so much to explain leading up to that one. There's just so much to have to explain that, you know, it was coming down to the wire as far as the publication date went. And I couldn't quite figure out how to make that one succinct at all. Like, all this background and online info. So maybe in the sequel I'll have it together by then. But it was a great experience. And I still am like, wow, man, Diddy's really cool for doing that. He's cool in so many ways. But for doing that in particular, it speaks pretty well to his sense of humor.
Your book is blurbed on the cover glowingly by comedy superstars like Patton Oswalt and Amy Poehler, Seth Meyers, Paul Scheer, Rob Hubel. How does your lifelong self-revealed loserdom jive with that kind of praise?
Well, you know, it's nice to know that they respect me and what I have to offer and what I've done. And I've gotten to know a lot of those guys through my stories and whatnot. And it's definitely, you know, you're right, I do have self-proclaimed loserdom, and those are some pretty heavy hitters in the entertainment industry, but, you know, I think anybody who's doing comedy probably has a sort of nerdy side or a part of them that feels like maybe they were boxed out socially as a young person. I'm not, you know, it's not any breaking news that a lot of comedians maybe have that side to their personality, so
right.
I think a lot of those guys identify with it, and also, you know, I've been doing comedy in New York for 12 years now, and that was a long time, and I've had a few, you know, near misses with the more traditional versions of success, you know.
TV
shows. I've been writing and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, it can be a little daunting, but it's also very nice to see that people like that do respect my work, even though it's not as mainstream as some of the other stuff out there. So pretty good on them to reach out and let me know that, contribute. It really means a lot.
You were a guest writer on Saturday Night Live briefly. How was that experience? Was it as intense as everybody says it is?
It was and it wasn't. It was intense in the pacing and the schedule and, you know, the insanity of putting together a show in 4 or 5 days. That was definitely intense. It was a much warmer family vibe than I'd read about. It wasn't as cutthroat and competitive. People were rooting for each other. People wanted to see each other succeed. So that was really great. It was a great thing to be a part of. it also was such a an intimidating environment for me as a young man, and doing it, it was really sort of the thing that lit a fire under me to really get serious about trying to have a career in comedy, and most of the things that have happened since root back to that. It was a very great experience to be there. It was a very crushing experience to not get hired there on a more permanent basis, but ultimately it was a real kick in the pants to get to work and make things happen for myself. So it was a huge motivator, both in positive and sometimes negative ways, and I'm very glad it happened in the long run, and psyched to be even the tiniest part of the history of that show.
And in the few minutes we have remaining, I want to help you with, if I can, and want you to tell us about the Loser is the New Nerd movement you've started.
Yes, that I'm very excited about. Basically, the thing behind that is it's very hip to be a nerd these days, and that's cool. There's all these people who it's sort of like a fashionable choice they make. And I've just noticed that for a lot of people like myself, we didn't necessarily have that choice to make growing up. It was something we were born into. I wear glasses because my eyes aren't strong, you know?
Right.
Like, my forehead is huge. If Zooey Deschanel decides that nerds aren't cool anymore, she can get out of this. She doesn't have to be a part of this. I'll be stuck with it like I was stuck with it before it was a fashionable thing. So nerd used to be synonymous with the word loser, and I'm just encouraging all the nerds who were born into it to embrace the fact that they're losers, to own up to the fact that loser is now what nerd used to be. And I want people to take pride in that, and I'm trying to encourage everybody to send their picture of yourself holding a sign that says, I'm a loser. Take a picture of yourself holding a sign that says, I'm a loser. Send it to loseristhenewnerd@gmail.com. We'll show it on public access TV in New York, and I don't think there's any bigger loser move than being on public access TV, so... hopefully everybody wants to get on board, but only people who are born with it, kids who had asthma and needed to go get, like, allergy patch tests, kids who had those eye patches because they had lazy eyes, you know, the real losers, the real nerds.
The Chris Gethard Show is on public access, but it also streams online, so people can watch it all over the country. It is on at 11 o'clock at night on Wednesday nights. The book, A Bad Idea I'm About to Do, True Tales of Seriously Poor Judgment and Stunningly Awkward Adventure, is by Chris Gethard, published by DiCapo Press. Chris, I'm a fan. Thank you so much for your time, and good luck with everything.
Thank you very much.
Chris Gethard's book, A Bad Idea I'm About to Do, True Tales of Seriously Poor Judgment and Stunningly Awkward Adventure, is published by DiCapo Press. You can watch The Chris Gethard Show online at thechrisgethardshow.com. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.